Have you ever wondered how the atmosphere radiating out of a piece of art, or how the vibes from a special moment in life, or have you ever noticed how a neural network can reveal the hidden logic of our world? If you've ever wondered these things, then our speaker today, Pelli Greitzer, he blends machine learning, philosophy, and art. In this talk, the feelings of structure in life, art, and neural networks. Pelli will explore how vibes, aesthetics, mood, atmosphere can model the logic of our world. So let's get ready for a deep dive into this connection between art, life, and neural networks. And let's please have a warm welcome from Pelli Greitzer.
Hi, everyone. So this talk is going to be about the ways in which we sense, experience, model, construct, and share understandings of the ambient internal logics of the world that we encounter as we go throughout life. You know, worlds that might be material, textual, sensory, psychological, social. And this talk is also going to suggest that by thinking about certain kind of neural network models, we can gain quite a lot of insight into the special role that creating and experiencing works of art plays in our capacity to reflect on, communicate about, and interact with both these ambient inner logics itself and our constructed representations of them. So the central proposition of my whole project could be described as informally the idea that it's possible to learn a way of seeing by examining a group of objects that this way of seeing sees the best. This is to say, for any sort of like way of grasping the world in accordance with a certain kind of inner logic or mode of like attunement, there is going to be some material or like sensory constellation of objects that this way of seeing is objectively well suited to. And examining this constellation of objects is going to be a surprisingly potent way to reverse engineer the way of seeing. I take my cue in this project from the way in which compression-based representation learning neural nets, what you might call in the relatively broad sense autoencoders, not only learn low-dimensional representation spaces for data, but also learn a projection from each point in the input space, or like the sensory space in which data appears, to a lower-dimensional embedded submanifold within that sensory space. You know, we might call this the canonical submanifold, the place where the ideal objects that the objects encountered in every day get projected into or compared to exist. A word of warning about my use of autoencoders, about which we're going to learn a lot more soon throughout this talk. The way that I'm going to be sticking with autoencoders makes this talk a little bit allegorical in one sense, which is that autoencoders as representation learners are really at their best when they're dealing with quite constrained worlds or like systems of implicit gestalt or like implicit systemic syntax. You know, autoencoders are great if you want to sort of like extract or like absorb the logic of the world of all images of Greek statues or like the world of all amoeba DNA codes. They're like less effective, perhaps, if you're trying to deal directly with the kind of worlds that we'll be talking about in the case of human life world, you know, worlds that are at least at the surface level quite diverse and composed of ships and shoes and sealing wax, cabbages and kings, as the saying goes. However, recent research strongly suggests that diffusion models, which are actually really good at dealing with very diverse, at least at the sensory level, you know, like sprawling universes of like data are in some sense learning a system of interrelated local autoencoders. So there is hope, you know, for like a pathway from the allegorical to the literal here in principle. Okay, so what is an autoencoder? An autoencoder is a neural network process tasked with learning from scratch through a kind of trial and error how to make copies or facsimiles or imitation of worldly things. Let's call a hypothetical exemplary autoencoder S. We're going to call the set of all the inputs we give S for a construction, let us say, many, many images of human faces, or many, many audio files of jungle sounds, or many, many scans of city maps, S's training set. Whenever S receives an input media file X, S's feature function or encoder function outputs a short list of short numbers, and S's decoder function tries to recreate media file X based on the encoder function's summary of X. Of course, since the variety of possible media files is much wider than the variety of possible short lists of short numbers, something must necessarily get lost in the translation from media file to feature values or code and back. Many possible media files translate into the same short list of short numbers, and yet each short list of short numbers can only translate back into one media file. Trying to minimize the damage in the training process, though, induces S to learn, again through a kind of trial and error, a fairly effective schema or mental vocabulary for its training set, exploiting rich holistic patterns in the data in its summary and reconstruction process. S's summaries, or you know, short codes, become in effect kind of cognitive mapping of its training set, a kind of gestalt fluency that ambiently models its training set like a niche or a life world. So here we have a couple of illustrations of what the autoencoder would look like schematically. Now, what an autoencoder algorithm learns, instead of making perfect reconstructions, is a system of features or code that can generate approximate reconstructions of the objects of the training set. In fact, the difference between an object in the training set and its reconstruction, mathematically, the trained autoencoder's reconstruction error on the object, demonstrates what we might think of rather literally as the excess of material reality over the gestalt systemic logic of autoencoding. And you say we can think of the reconstruction error of a well-trained autoencoder as telling us what about the material world exceeds what can be grasped through the structures and logic of transformation and variation and meaningful difference that the autoencoder managed to learn. We're going to call the set of all the possible inputs for which a given trained autoencoder S has zero reconstruction error. That is to say, inputs for which the autoencoder loses nothing where it reconstructs them, it can reconstruct them exactly. S is like image, which is also what it is in a mathematical functional sense. You know, it's just like the image of the decoder function. So the image of an autoencoder is the set of all the objects that a given trained autoencoder, its imaginative power bounded as they are to the span of just a handful respective variation or structural principles, can imagine or conceive of whole without approximation or simplification. This to say with zero reconstruction error. If the autoencoder's training was successful, then we should expect the objects in the autoencoder's like image, you know, the set of like all possible reconstructions slash the set of all possible objects that can be reconstructed with zero loss, to exemplify a kind of idealization or simplification of the objects of the worldly domain that the autoencoder trained on. This is to say, so the set of the images the autoencoder produces expresses sort of like an idealization of the training set in accordance with all the structural logics that the autoencoder could implicitly extract in the training process. Like some more illustrations of autoencoders. Here's an autoencoder. It's like too small for its training set, and we can see that it can't quite learn object, but it kind of like learn what objecthood kind of in general is like. You know, it can't really get any particular like object, but it gets all of like the general like direction of what it is to be an object of like a certain kind. Okay, so what can we do with this idea of autoencoding? For one thing, I want to suggest that we can think about the so-called hermeneutics of suspicion, the classical 90s kind of subversive approach to reading and critiquing media, as a kind of model reversal process that infers from what is found and not found in the world constructed by a piece of media, a system of thought and feeling that makes certain real-world phenomena unthinkable, invisible, foreclosed to the order of things. The suspicious media critic would construct from observation of the media work, selection of phenomena, you know, the way in which the media object or set of media objects kind of like curates reality, a generative model implicit in the work, and then find what is repressed or marginalized and what sort of like falls within the gaps in the generative model that can be reverse engineered from the curation that the media object or the media system performs on the world. You know, like we find states of the life world that the generative logic of, let's say, like, you know, Hollywood films or, you know, cishet sexuality or whatever cannot like generate. You know, we find the material excess that falls outside the gestalt combinatorics learned by the system and expressed in its reconstructions. I want to argue that systems of sense-making that we usually define by the excess material reality that they erase, that is to say that we define as like ideology when we do like ideology critique or media critique, can also be defined through the aesthetic unity of the material realities that they access best. You know, we can characterize these systems not only sort of like intellectually by looking at what they can't produce or like can't model or like what drops out of their recreation of reality, but also characterize them through the unity or coherence or like aesthetic or like generative like logic of the things that they in fact can model very well. And I want to say that we should call this kind of aesthetic unity or coherence or like harmony of everything that is sort of like saliently and capaciously seeable from like a certain modeling of the world, the vibe of the system of like thinking and feeling. So the image of like a trained autoencoder or, you know, its canonical set, is something that recapitulates the ideology of a system of understanding differences and similarity in the form of a vibe or an aesthetic unity or like a structural harmony. In my research with the mathematician Tomer Schlank, we observed that given the image of a trained autoencoder, you know, given like its zero loss set or the reconstruction that it produces, one needs only a small amount of samples to approximately reverse engineer the autoencoder's encoding system. That is to say, the system for understanding and representing the world, for comparing objects for like to one another, for like tracking similarity and differences, that is implicit in the production of the reconstruction. If an autoencoder is a way of seeing, a way of foreclosing, disclosing aspects of the material and sensory world, the autoencoder's image, its canonical set, is the set of objects that this way of seeing sees most clearly, most completely, and if each object contains a concentrated dose of the essence of the way of seeing. So why should this be so closely related to the idea of like aesthetics or like vibe or something that like resides at the interface of like between the strictly sensory and the substantive or the structural? Well, autoencoders, we know, deal entirely in worlds rendered as sets of objects. Whatever deeper worldly structure an autoencoder's schema brings to the interpretation of an individual object, these structures must be somehow implicit in the mere act of grouping so-and-so objects together and thinking about them all at once. You know, this is quite similar to the Deleuze-Guattarian concept of an assemblage, if anyone's into that kind of stuff. So I want to think about this aesthetically accessible, surface accessible, world-making echo of deeper structural logics in the matter of like collections of like objects viewed together as the mathematical substrate of what the writer slash musician Ezra Koenig, which I'm here going to be quoting via the novelist Elif Baruman, describes as a vibe. I'm going to be quoting the novelist Elif Baruman. Elif talks about how it was during my research on the workings of charm and pop music that I stumbled on Internet Vibes, a blog that Ezra Koenig kept in 2006 with the goal of categorizing as many vibes as possible. For example, a rain gray British vibe incorporates the walk from a barber store or to look at Wellington boots, to the Whitney Museum, to look at some avant-garde shorts by Robert Beavers, as well as the TV adaptation of Brideshead Revisited, the Scottish electronic duo Boards of Canada, late 90s Radiohead, Global Anxiety, Airports, and New Jersey. A vibe turns out to be something like local color with a historical dimension. What gives a vibe authenticity and substance is its ability to evoke, using a small number of disparate elements, a certain time, place, and milieu, a certain nexus of historic, geographical, and cultural forces. Now, it is a fundamental property of any reasonably sized trade autoencoder's image, the image again being the set of all the objects that the autoencoder can generate or can losslessly reconstruct, that all the objects in the image align with what you might call a limited generative vocabulary. This is to say, the objects in the image of an autoencoder are defined by the existence of a simple-ish function from building each of them using, a simple-ish function for building each of them using the encoder coordinates as instruction. The objects that make up the trained autoencoder's actual worldly domain, by implication, roughly align or approximately align with the same limited generative vocabulary. The actual like image of the autoencoder is going to be perfectly or without any approximation loss constructible using a simple-ish function. Whereas like the training domain, if the autoencoder is successful at all, is going to be approximable by those like simple-ish functions that can be also like effectively encoded in a low-dimensional way. These structural relations of alignment, I propose, are closely tied to certain concepts of aesthetic unity that commonly imply a unity of generative logic. For example, in both the intuitive and the sort of like philosophical concept of like a style or like a mood, you know, Stimmung if you're Heideggerian, or like a tone. By way of paraphrase, we might say that the objects that make up a trained autoencoder's image are individually complex, but collectively simple. Here we can think about, you know, demo scene and, you know, 64K or however many K you want, like intros, you know, where there's nothing that makes any of the individual like objects that you'll encounter in the intro particularly computationally simple, but when you take like all of them like together, the reuse of computational like resources means that an underlying unity can be like leveraged to allow to construct all of this with very constrained resources. And you know, this is something we can kind of think of in terms of Kolmogorov complexity. You might think that like the objects within like the image of a trained autoencoder, again, you know, the set of like the idealization the autoencoder constructs, are, you know, only with some minor abuse of notation, such that any sufficiently large collection of these like object is like low Kolmogorov complexity via our ability to like specify the smallish neural network and then specify the low dimensional code for like objects using within like the generative code of the neural network. You know, and therefore, to the extent that the autoencoder can produce an all effective approximation, what the autoencoder is like telling us is that like the part of the world it can like model or touch on are like approximately local Kolmogorov complexity or have like local Kolmogorov complexity approximations. Sorry, one moment, please. Okay, so where are we going with this? I want to think of a work of art, you know, could be works of literature, could be installation, could be LARPs, movies, comics, as something like autoencoder images, or, you know, the perfectly reconstructible set associated with a hypothetical autoencoder. A work of art is a set of images or objects or like ideas or notions that are losslessly compressible through some reasonably compact hypothetical autoencoder. So, you know, the meaning of a literary work like Dante's Inferno or, you know, Grant Morrison's The Invisibles or like Kathy Acker's Bangguts in high school lies at least partly in an aesthetic vibe or style that we can sense when we consider all the myriad objects and phenomena that make up the imaginative landscape of the work as a kind of coherent, curated set. Now, there's a certain like je ne sais quoi that makes every soul, demon, and machine in Dante's vision of hell a good fit for Dante's vision of hell. Now, suppose that when a person grasps a style or a vibe in a set of worldly phenomena, part of what she grasps can be compared to the formula of an autoencoder trained on this collection of objects. The image of the abstract trained autoencoder then would be an idealization of the set of worldly phenomena, intensifying the worldly set's own internal logic. It is a kind of taking the blueprint of a set of like loosely, roughly structured, you know, somewhat like interrelated, somewhat coherent phenomena, and sort of like, you know, pulling it out and like overlaying it on top of the phenomena. Now, going the other way around, we might consider the idea that when the imaginative landscape of a work of art or a literary work possesses a very strong unity of style, the aesthetic unity of the artifactual collection of ideas, images, thoughts, objects is potentially an idealization of a looser, weaker aesthetic unity between the objects or phenomena associated with a real-world domain that the work of art encodes. So the story I'm suggesting is something like, you know, we encounter like the world, we extract certain structures that only like approximately or like loosely like model the world, but allow us to sort of like, you know, navigate it at like an ambient level. They give like meaning to like relations between things. And then if you want to like communicate these like structures to each other, like reflect like upon them, what we can do is generate facsimiles of like the world that are like perfectly rather than approximately structured by these extracted ambient structures. And so allow, you know, highly effective reverse engineering of the system of abstractions implicit in the autoencoder, allow like various kinds of reflection introspection, and allow intersubjective communication of those systems of implicit logic both whatever degree they capture objective relations in the world that are useful to share, and to whatever degree we need to like be able to share our sort of like a subjective, flawed, disclosing, but also foreclosing, modeling, and sensing and like mooding of the world. So my proposal is that kind of dense vibe, you know, tight vibe, overwhelmingly drenching everything vibe in the imaginative landscape associated with a work of art potentially acts as a schematization or structural representation of a loose vibe of the collective objects and phenomena of a real world domain. I would offer similarly that the dense aesthetic structure in question thus potentially provides a schema for interpreting the objects or phenomena of a real world domain in accordance with a real life, in accordance with the systemic gestalt given through the imaginative landscape of the literary work. Sorry, this was kind of like a needle's repetition of what the previous sentence just said. I apologize. For example, we might consider the imaginative landscape of Franz Kafka's corpus. It is not very outrageous, I believe, to offer that a Kafka text operates as just this kind of aesthetic schema for the unity or the affinity of a collection of real-world phenomena. A reader of Kafka learns to see a kind of Kafkaesque, Kafkan logic or like structure at play in such like diverse phenomena as the experience of going to the bank, the experience of being broken up with, the experience of waking up in a daze, the experience of being lost in a foreign city, or the experience of police interrogation. In part by learning that surprisingly many of the real-life nuances of these experiences can be well approximated in a literary world whose constructs are like fully bound to the extremely exacting, extremely constrained, extremely, at least to my intuitions, you know, seemingly sort of like, you know, computationally sparsely generated aesthetic rules of like Kafkan construction. You know, we learn to grasp Kafkaesque aesthetic logic and certain worldly phenomena, in other words, partly by learning that the pure Kafkan aesthetic logic of Kafka's literary world can generate a surprisingly good likeness of these worldly phenomena. How much time do I have left? Sorry? 12 minutes? Great. Why do I say that, you know, a vibe or the kind of thing captured by an autoencoder and perhaps also by a work of art should be called a feeling of structure or an experience of a system or a gestalt? Perhaps the best conceptual bridge from the raw aesthetic unity that we associate with an autoencoder's like image or with an exceptionally coherent work of art to a kind of systemic gestalt modeling of reality is what you might call the relation of comparability between all the objects in a trade autoencoder's like image. The global aesthetic unity of the objects in a set fit for autoencoding, I propose, is not just technically, but also conceptually and phenomenologically inseparable from the global intercomparability of the objects in this set. And the global intercomparability of like a set of like objects is not just technically, but also conceptually and phenomenologically inseparable from the representation of these like objects as states or like parts of a system. I'm gonna show you a little bit of ways in which an autoencoder allows us to do sort of like system-wise manipulations on the objects that it allows us like to represent. You know, this is of like some nice vector space like arithmetic. Here we see an interpolation within the space of like an autoencoder. Learning to sense a system and learning to sense in relation to a system, learning to see a style and learning to see in relation to a style are autoencoders or not autoencoders more or less one and the same thing. If the above is right, and then aesthetic unity of the kind associated with like a style or a vibe is immediately a sensible representation of a logic of like difference or of change or of like meaningful transformations between intercomparable things. Then we can deduce the following rule of cognition. Functional access to the data analysis capacities of a trade into encoders, encoder function follows in the very long run, even from an appropriate style perception or like vibe perception alone. You know, learning to recognize a style or like a vibe is you know, at the heart of it, the same thing as learning to see the inner logic and inner relations of comparability or of like transformations of like system states among the things that live within that vibe or style. Now, one reason that the mathematical cognitive trope of autoencoding, as I've been presenting it, matters, I would argue, is that it describes the bare first act of treating a collection of objects or phenomena as a set of states of a system rather than a bare collection of objects or phenomena. It's the minimal ambient systemization that raises stuff to the level of things, raises things to the level of world, and raises one thing after another to the level of experience. And equally, it is the minimal ambient systemization that erases non-conforming stuff on the authority of things, that marginalizes non-conforming things to make a world, and that potentially degenerates experience into false consciousness. In relating the input space points of a set manifold to points in the lower dimensional internal space of the manifold, an autoencoder's model makes the fundamental distinction between appearance and substance, or surface and structure, that turns the input space points of the manifold into a system's range of visible states rather than merely an arbitrary set of phenomena. The parallel aesthetic unity in a world or in a work of art, what I've called its vibe, is arguably in this sense something like a maximally objectified variant of Heideggerian mood or like Stimmung. You know, for Heidegger, famously, mood is a kind of presumed view of the total picture that conditions any specific attitude towards any particular thing. It's the, you know, fundamental placing of an object or like experience or like sensory instance within a space of like possibility, a space of similarities and differences, you know, that turns it into an event. So I want to say that like to sense like a vibe is something like sensing the Stimmung of a system, and that like a Stimmung or like a mood, the vibe of a set of like phenomena that we encounter in any kind of like human or like inhuman world and absorb and model and map and then possibly express and reflect upon using the creation of those you know, abstracta embodying concreta that are the works of art, is a precondition for and medium for all more specific operations of subjectivity. What autoencoding gives us is something like a systems or a world's basic systemhood, basic worldhood. It's, you know, barest having a way about it, you know, it's basic how it vibes. Thank you so much for bearing with me. You know, here we can see some like examples from like relatively old type of like autoencoder of the kind of simplification or like idealization that goes on as like a consequence of the representation learning and dimensionality reduction. On one side, you've got the training set faces. On the other side, you've got reconstructions. If anybody wants to see like more of those cool transformations, you know, here we can see quite a powerful like example of the kind of like, you know, denoising or idealizing or like normalizing like effects. Where like here after training we have, you know, a cat in like a with three eyes and like a toothbrush, and the third eye gets like removed, and the toothbrush is like transformed into something vaguely cat-like. Again, this is like a relatively old autoencoder, but a good one. I would love to start questions early. I believe I must have tried your patience like enough with this very labyrinthine talk.
We have a microphone in the middle of the floor for anyone who's here live that wants to ask questions, and you can queue up there. For now, while we're waiting for the queue to start up, let's start with the signal angels, if there are any questions from the internet.
No, there aren't.
There are no questions from the internet. So what were some of the funniest things that you have discovered when you were going through some of these experiments of finding out how neural networks see the world?
Man, I'm not sure that I have like a really great answer to this. I think like personally, like many people, I'm really fond of these sort of like, you know, two small network like examples, where, you know, it seems like it can't learn any objects, but it can learn objecthood. And that seems like possibly quite like a potentially deep like paradigm for thinking about what, you know, certain like modes of like semi-developed perceptual like fluency might be like, you know, perhaps sort of like infant consciousness, or when you've done like truly too much like acid, you know. But also like this is like fascinating because like suggests, you know, the fact that these are like recognizably objects without recognizably being any particular like object, it kind of shows that we have a kind of like sense of what like the space of objects qua object is like, and you can be sort of like, you know, legibly moving within like the space of physical objecthood, yet without ever stepping, you know, ever like passing through the spot of any actual like physical object, you know. So we can think of something like these like images as perhaps, you know, demonstrating like an autoencoder that has sort of like learned like enough to learn the vibe of like objecthood or sort of like physical like worldhood or of like imagehood. But hasn't like learned like enough to, you know, leverage it into any more specifically conceptually viable manifestation.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm quite fascinated by those instances of like objecthood as such, or the objecthood vibe, or objecthood space, and the ability to dance around it without any actual objects.
Okay, it looks like we have two people at the microphones. I'll take microphone number one.
Hi. I was thinking about Susan Ley-Starr and her concept of silences, which are basically things that are omitted by systems. So, for example, the applied to the encoder would be something that the encoder doesn't see based on the data it was maybe created with. How would you transfer that into your vibe? Concept. So what would be the vibe of these silences?
So I think, you know, not to say Heidegger again, I guess like, you know, using like Heidegger to talk about like machine learning stuff is my weird anti-Heideggerian revenge act. But, you know, I think there's something to the idea that like, you know, foreclosing and disclosing always like go like together. and any kind of, you know, encoding or like reconstruction or presentation that can bring out structure and like track structure can be also characterized by what it resolves or what itself like locks itself into treating as like noise or as like intractable variation or like irrelevant variation or like unthinkable variation. And I think, as I mentioned sort of like earlier in the talk, one of the things that like interested me is this like idea that like, you know, usually when we do this kind of like exclusion-based like analysis of like aesthetic objects or like media objects or sort of like, you know, culturally propagated systems of like sense, we do it in a, you know, fairly explicit concept-based like way of saying like, oh look, this and that kind of like sexuality is like excluded from like the space of like possibilities like imparted to us by like, you know, such and such like a TV show or what have you. And I'm really interested in the idea that there is a kind of like you know, duality here where we could also be looking at the kind of aesthetic coherence or like unity or compressibility, you know, even like, yeah, in generally computational like terms that is to be found within like a certain either like world, either like constructed like social world or its aesthetic or like media representation and experience sort of like the presence side of like the absence, you know, experience the kind of like presence and like unity and interrelatability that is the, you know, the twin of like the exclusion or like the silencing, partly, you know, because I think this is typically something that we will be experiencing more in a kind of like, you know, aesthetic, poetic, ambient, like hard to like articulate like mode. So yeah, I'm very interested in the idea that like, you know, you might think of it like the vibe ideology or the coherence slash like silencing duality and what it tells about the relationship between sort of like aesthetic immersion in a cultural system or presentational system and a kind of more, you know, theoretical social analysis of it.
Okay, there's another question at microphone number 4.
Mine is kind of similar to what was asked before, but so the idea of overfitting when training autoencoders, how does that relate to the relation of cognition and autoencoders in the theory?
So this actually allows me to talk about one of my favorite things, which is like one way to think about stuff like, you know, I have like fairly in some ways like traditional romantic views of like works of art. I believe like works of art are magic. And one way to think about stuff like, oh, what makes like works of art like so magical is like, well, a work of art is an object you can't overfit on, where the idea is something like, you know, you can have like an autoencoder and you can have like the training set of the autoencoder and you can have the set, you know, of the reconstructions, what I call like the canonical set or the image of the autoencoder. And now if you have like a fresh autoencoder and you want the fresh autoencoder to sort of like learn what the trained autoencoder like already knows, if you train on a small sample from the original training set, you know, if the sample is pretty small and you train a lot, you're gonna like overfit like crazy. You know, you don't want to reach like a loss on the training set that's like lower than what the original autoencoder like had. But if you train on like a small to medium sample from the autoencoder's reconstruction, what I call like, you know, like the work, you know, what in my analogy is like the work of art, then you can, you know, you can basically get to full interpolation. You can like get like the error like down like to zero, and you will still like learn exactly what the original autoencoder like learned. So the idea is like, you know, the work of art is a kind of, you know, distilled, idealized like object that contains everything that we extracted from the original objects of the world, then it means that, yeah, that one could like train on it and never ever like overfit, because like every, you know, last like drop of you know, sort of like material content in the sample from the idealized set like reflects learnable structure. So, you know, so you can think of like work of art as a kind of like, you know, paradise in which like there is no overfitting, in which you can sort of like drink and drink and drink from like the fountain of harmony and coherence and compression, and, you know, never get poisoned.
I have a follow-up. Do you have time?
Yeah, I think so.
Do we? Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
So then, following from this, the idea of style transfer. So let's say you have 2-3 autoencoders, and you feed the outputs of the first 2 autoencoders into the second one, the third one. Now, the third one is bound to learn from the first 2, right? And it's bound to kind of combine the styles. That kind of relates to how artists learn from each other. And you can see the style moving over time through like different artists and generations. Do you think that has something to do with autoencoders as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, vibe has to be like a multi-scale concept. As I said, in some sense, I think it's probably like true vibes are maybe better like thought of in terms of like diffusion models or something like this, because there's a kind of sort of like, you know, something like overly constrained in NOR, but like autoencoders proper, because, you know, they have to learn one Euclidean chart for like everything, one lower dimensional manifold for like everything. In principle, I think like vibe have, you know, they're like vibes of vibes, vibes of vibes of vibes. You know, and they're also sort of like, you know, perhaps like without going like a meta level up, there are certain like, you know, blended vibes. One experiment that I always wanted to do and I never quite had sort of like the budget and like time for is sort of like see whether, you know, for something like, you know, like sets of like, you know, architectural like blueprints, you know, taking from like a certain like period or like style or like movement are going to be more compressible than like a set, than like a set that contains, you know, randomly half and half from like 2 extremely different architectural movements. You know, this has to be done with quite a lot of like thought, because you don't want kind of like shallow confounders, like, oh, people from this like architectural school like use a lot of like squares, and people from this architectural school use a lot of circles. You want to like, you know, make sure that if you find that like that there truly is a compressibility difference between the like intuitively style coherent set and the intuitively style incoherent set, this comes from like, you know, quite deep subtle structures rather than like surface stuff. But yeah, I'm very interested in the question of how literally we can like apply this idea to the question of like, you know, the integrability, the compatibility of different, you know, cultural moments, different, you know, what Raymond Williams would call like structures of like feeling, different like aesthetic and conceptual like style, and whether this can, you know, help us like understand sort of like why certain forms of sort of like, you know, cultural like hybridity or like synthesis are sort of like, you know, intuitive, like very productive, whereas like others can feel sort of like gimmicky or like artificial. So yeah, I'm very interested in that stuff.
Thank you.
I thought I saw someone else in line at microphone 1, but did they disappear? Maybe that was... Are there any more questions from the audience or from the... I'll ask again at the internet.
No, it's still nothing.
All right. Then I would like to thank our speaker.
Thanks.
Pelli.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for this lovely talk.
Thanks.